Hello and welcome to News Roast. I'm Julian Rubinstein.
I'm Hayden Prowse, and this week, once again, we are live from Shoreditch House with a new live News Roast podcast. Joel, you're interviewing someone this week, aren't you?
Who's that? I got to speak to Asim Chowdhury, a.k.a. the mayor of Hounslow, a.k.a. Chabuddy G.
Love him.
It was just so fun. Like, he's just one of the nicest, funniest, most giving guys. And I think if you are interested in like getting into comedy as a profession, then this is like a really good example. I mean, like Hayden and I had, you know, we got in a very strange way. We started making videos on YouTube and sort of came up in our 30s. And so did Asim. In fact, something that was hilarious that I found out, which I didn't know, is that pretty much all the people from People Just Do Nothing met in a call centre.
In a call centre?
They're in Kingston, making calls. So if you're sitting now doing a job...
If you're in a call centre, doing a job you don't like, listen to this podcast. And this is a guide, a how-to. It's the how to get into comedy and make one of the coolest shows on TV
It's just so interesting to hear, you know, people that you really admire talking about how they did their work. And like what we've tried to do in this In Conversation series is really talk a bit more, less about three courses and much more about them, who they are and how they got into what they're doing. So I really hope you enjoy this podcast. It was so fun. And massive thanks again to Shoreditch House for hosting us.
Asim Chowdhury!
He's so good, he can clap himself and it's all good. How you doing?
Oh, shit, I got a mic on.
Oh, shit.
Sick.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, bro.
Good.
How you doing?
Good. So, let's start with the show that everyone knows about, People Just Do Nothing. So that started online.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a YouTube thing. So like, me and Beats, we went to college together. Beats went to school with Steve's, and then we met Grindr, like in the rap scene. The boys watched this documentary called Tower Block Dreams that was on BBC Three as well. It was a pirate radio documentary, and we just fell in love with it. And obviously, Grindr and Beats used to like actually spit at pirate radio stations back in the day.
Yeah. So even in the early, like the really, really early days, where did the characters come from?
I think it was a combination of like obviously watching that documentary. I think every artist, what they do first is they mimic, right? And then you find your own voice. Yeah. So I think there was an element of that copying from the documentary, but also we grew up with so many MCs, DJs. Yeah. For me, you know, the Chabuddy character was like, I'm from Hounslow, like, my dad is proper real Chabuddy. Right, and like I grew up with like
real.
I was just telling you about. I saw him yesterday, and he was just like non-stop hustler. We were in a restaurant, and he went up to a guy, and I was with him, and he was like, he went up to me, he's like, do you know my son? And he started Googling me, and he was like, look, my son. And the guy, it was like an ice cream parlor, and he was like, you should do a bloody video for them. You get free ice cream. And I'm like, Dad, I don't want a free ice cream. But no, he's a hustler, like, born, like, put him anywhere on God's green earth, like, and he will make money, you know what I mean? But he can't keep it, that's the problem. That's his problem, he can make money, but he can't keep money. So, you know, that was, like, a combination of my dad, my uncle, so many of my Hounslow boys I grew up with. Yeah. Like, and I personally think that the characters resonate with so many people because I think everyone knows a Steve's, everyone's grown up with someone like Grindr, someone like Chabuddy. Everyone knows these people, even like, you know, Meesh as well. Like these characters are real people. And like we satirized it from a place of like sincerity. It wasn't like we were drama school kids and these posh kids that were like poor people. You know, it wasn't that. It was like we were from the same areas these people grew up in. Yeah. But we were just aware of it. They're not aware. So like when I do, like my dad loves Chabuddy. But he doesn't think that he's like a loser. He's like, he's a bloody smart guy. I think, not in a mean way, but when the joke's on someone, they don't always get it.
Do you think that kind of, you know, when you're talking to people who are sort of coming up, it sort of sometimes sort of eludes people that actually the people in, you know, your own life that you know, that's all you can kind of draw from, isn't it?
Of course, like you have to write about what you know and you have to, like there's no point me doing something that I don't know about. The world I know about is Hounslow, it's music, it's, you know, comedy. Like that's what I grew up listening to and doing. So I think that's the key. Like, and it's cliche, but it's like write about what you know. Like, you know, and people know second, they like I get scripts through and it's like they try and write for certain characters, you know. And you're just reading it and it's like, you know, they're trying to get the slang right. And it's like, yo, cuz blood, and you're like, oh, no one says cuz blood together. Pick one. But it's like that. It's that sincerity. And you know within... It's like, I always think scripts are like songs. Yeah. They're like acting. Like, you know within the first 10 seconds if that person's good or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just, you just know. There's a sincerity. There's like a truth. Like, they, you have to have that truth. And if you don't see that, then, you know, you can't patronize people. People can see right through it,
yeah.
You know? Especially today. And people ask us, like, how'd you get your dialogue so, like, authentic? Like, God, it's so authentic, you know? And it's like, no, that's just how people chat. That's how people chat, you know?
Okay, so let's go back a bit in time to, like, when the first ever episode came out. Like, where were you all together, like, watching it
on TV?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was actually working in, I was doing Ingest for Ericsson, so
amazing.
It was like a technical job. I really loved it. It was great, but it's like tape registration, basically, right? And it's really strange, actually, because I worked there, and then I was working for the BBC, actually. And I remember when the series came, when the first pilot came out, I was like doing the tape registration for my own show. So I was sitting there, and there's like all these screens there, and there's a guy passing by, and I'm on the screen. And I'm like typing in all the, you know, all the information for the thing, and a guy just walked past and was like, "What the fuck?" So yeah, I was working, and
yeah.
It was a full time job, and I used all my holiday to film and, you know, help write the show, and I did that for like 2.5 years. So that was like my, I just had no free time. It was
no,
just
look,
like, it was because it was a risk, and you know, like when you start off, and we weren't trained or you know, we had no. Like, we were first-timers, like, we were not proven, you know? So it was like, first-time actors, first-time writers, no one's just going to be like, yeah, go on, have 6 eps.
Yeah.
So we had to really fight for it, like, our pilot, and then nearly a year and a half later, and it's like, no money, like, it was nothing. So we had to, we all had full-time jobs. Then even when we got the series, we got 4 eps. So it's like, even then, it was like, well, these guys are not tried and tested. Like, these guys, we haven't proven shit yet. They've got a little online following. So it was a humbling time, but obviously an amazing and surreal time. But it wasn't like an instant, whoa.
No, because it's like the first time, it's like, I remember the first time, you know, when I met Steve, it was at one of those, you know, BBC parties, right when the pilot had, you know, first come out. And we were just talking about that whole thing of, you know, I was doing like fucking, you know, like data entry at the Financial Times. You're all doing something whilst you do it. And I think people never really appreciate just how long it takes. It
takes a long time.
To do that. But so let's talk about when you first started like performing. Were you always a performer as a kid? Like, was that your thing?
I would say I was always an attention seeker, like pro attention seeker. I was always like, as a kid, I was like doing Michael Jackson shit, like to my parents, like putting on Man in the Mirror, all that shit. And, you know, I love just like performing, but not in a kind of, you know, like, look at me, not like that. More like annoying, like forcing people to sit down and like, you know. Yes, I always had that about me. And academically, I was terrible. Like, I smoked too much weed at school. I had too much fun at school, basically. Yeah. I was just like, I left school with like 2 GCSEs. And it's only when I started really doing, I did drama GCSE, but I got kicked out of my class. And this is, I'm still not over it. Still not over it. Basically, my mate, who looks like me, just like a fat Asian guy, basically, he threw a rubber at my teacher's head, the drama teacher's head, hit the back of her head. She turned around. She's white. She turned around and she saw me. And I was like, what? And then, like, it was a really big rubber as well. Like, you know, it was a chunky one. And she really like, ah! And she turned around and she saw me. And she kicked me out of the class. And it wasn't just that. I was also, you know, naughty and, you know, attention seeking. So that was like the last straw. She was like, fuck this little shit. So she kicked me out of class for 2 years. She said, Asim, you have to earn your grade now. Because you have to come in on time. You have to participate. But you have to earn your grade. So for 2 years, I was on my best behavior because I loved it. It was so much fun. Like, do this, do that. You know, it was like the most fun I ever had. You know, it wasn't academic. It was creative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't really have that in secondary school. Right. Like, I wasn't good at art. So yeah, that was, you know, it was a DOS lesson. German was a DOS lesson. So I only liked English and drama. So for 2 years, I was there trying to earn my grade back. And then I directed my group's play, right? And wrote and directed it. And it was like The Godfather. And it was like a Indian version of The Godfather.
Safe. What was the plot?
It was called The Poppadom Father. And he's like, owns these poppadoms factories. And he's a fucking don. And, you know, he's all that kind of shit, yeah? And I wrote it, and I thought, well, I might not get graded for this, so I'll give myself a little role, because I didn't want to, like... So I was just like a cleaner in one scene, just going past. And then the bitch still didn't grade me.
What? Right?
The whole group wrote a thing and being like, give Asim a chance, and she still didn't grade. You know what it is? I think in school, you guys are probably related. There's always teachers who, on the good side, you can do anything and you get away with it. Like, you get away because they love you. They've got a soft spot for you. And then there's some teachers that if you cough, you'll get a detention.
100%.
And she was the latter. So it was like, she killed my confidence. Like, I didn't do anything in terms of acting and performing after that. I was like, it really made me feel like, well, yeah. I can't do it.
I'm well, like, how couldn't it?
Like, yeah, I don't know. It was just, you know, it was weird. So I started doing behind the scenes stuff like writing and editing and filming. And I thought, okay, I'll do this then.
Totally.
But
yeah, you edited a lot of the early episodes, stuff. I used to film, like the online edit. Stuff. You used to actually cut that yourself.
Yeah, and I've always been an editor, like, because I think, I mean, you know this in comedy.
Yeah.
Like,
it's the cut.
Oh man, it's cutting all about jokes. The cut. Yeah. Like, you can, and especially with mockumentary, like,
100%.
You can cut to a talking head and cut to a scene. And those two things can be in perfect harmony.
Totally.
And then you cut to one cutaway of a reaction, like say Beats just being like, you know, and it just sells the scene. Like, it does, it's so much power in the edit. So I've always been a big fan of like being, and we're all involved in the edit. Like Steve will sit in there, feed us everything through. So that was a powerful thing to learn. Like, you know, in a way I kind of am grateful for that bitch. I'm over it, she's not a bitch. But I'm kind of grateful because I probably would have just done the performing stuff. I wouldn't have gone into the behind the scenes.
When you win a BAFTA in a couple of weeks, I think she should thank her. Yeah. Like, that rubber really, like, that really pushed me on.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I'm sort of talking to youngsters, I'm always saying to them as well, it's like, if you learn how to cut, then you can just do everything yourself. Because you are an example of somebody, you've created that reality for yourself. You know, it's not like you waited for anyone else to do it for you.
Yeah.
So now you have just done, you know, a short film.
Yeah.
Called Love Pool, so which you directed and you wrote. So tell everyone a bit about that.
Yeah, it's basically it's something that happened to me in real life. Like, I think around two and a half years ago, like when Uber Pool first started coming, you know, in this country, and I was pissed out of my face, and I jumped in an Uber thinking it was a normal Uber. And then, like, boss man stopped, and it was like, you know, and I was like, this isn't where I live. And then he was like, this is Uber Pool, idiot. You know? And then, like, in walks this girl, right? And I'm like, fuck, like, I was single at the time. And she I was like, she's hot, like. And then it was really awkward the first, like, you know, minute or so. And, you know, I was like, but then I just started playing some music and had the aux lead, and we just started, like, this sounds so cliche, but like we just clicked. That's in the film as well. So, you know, we clicked and we had a little connection. It was really like real and like spontaneous. And like, I was like, obviously we were both pissed out of our faces. And then like we exchanged numbers, and then she went off, and then, you know, boss man dropped me off. And then I got out of the car, right? And I still had the aux lead attached. So as I got out, it snapped. And then my phone went into a drain, right? And so I lost my phone, yeah? And I didn't save her number properly. So my phone was gone. But I'm not a psycho. I went home and I was just like, whatever, I'll never see her again. Wasn't meant to be. But in the film, what this dude does is that he starts getting Uber pulls, like, like weirdly, like a weird amount of times. And he's just like, you know, just sitting in there, just waiting for her to come in. And he's like, fuck's sake. So that was the pitch. And then we made it into a, that's what the film is. But we kind of, when I was writing it, it was that. But then as we were filming it, and with my mate, Mark Quarterly, who's the lead in it, like, it became something weird, like weirdly more poignant. And not in a way that we even intended it to. It became about like the romanticized version of love that we have. And a lot of the time it's from a female's perspective, the hysteria of love and the one and all that. But like, men, we don't really talk about it, but we kind of want to find the one
totally,
too. We're not all players.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we want to settle down and find the girl who's perfect for us. And in that film, he felt like she was perfect for him. And it's all about how ridiculous that notion is. And it's also about like those connections where you ill judge when you're like, fucking hell, man, she was fucking amazing. And then you meet her again and she's like, oh God, I fucking hate you. You know what I mean? So it was about like that unhealthy version of love.
Yeah.
And it's comedy, it's got, you know, fun stuff in it as well. And yeah, it was really cool to make.
But that type of comedy that you know that you do and your brand of comedy, it seems to always kind of ride that line of sort of social commentary. We were talking about upstairs about you know Chabuddy and people just do nothing. It's kind of also about the times we live in just as much. And this is you know the same sort of vein.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's about instant gratification. Like we live in like the fast generation, so it's like fast food, fast love, fast. Sex. I mean, everything. Well, not fast sex. No.
Very slow sex.
But like, you know, everything. We want everything instantly. Like our music, our movies is just instant. And if it's not there instantly, we're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no patience anymore. There's no, nothing can just like, you know, slow cook anymore. Everything just has to be like in the microwave, bang. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was a bit of commentary on that as well, because I used to be like, everything needs to happen for me. Like, even with your career, like, why isn't this popping?
Yeah, totally.
You know, why don't you? But it's like, no, because things take time to digest. And it's only when you step out of what you're doing is when you realize that, okay, you understand it more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So,
I think there's a thing about creating, you know, art or creating sort of, especially sort of pieces of social commentary where it's almost like you start seeing it differently when other people have kind of watched that as well. So in terms of, because I mean, we talked about like the reaction to the first episode. What about the first time you did your gigs?
Yeah.
I mean, because I was at the round, that was anyone else at any of their gigs? Did you see that? Yeah, that was crazy, right? It was crazy.
Who's been to a Corrupt FM gig here? Five people.
It's Shoreditch House, darling. All right, they're all in the countryside.
Yeah, it's well, a pretty, it's home. Pretty, yeah.
But it was insane. I mean, what was that like actually taking something that was a satirical, you know, notion of a band and suddenly it was, you know, a band.
Yeah.
You know, on stage.
I mean, yeah, I mean, credit goes to the boys for that because, they're the ones performing. I do the intro and do a Chabuddy song, but their vision was like...
If you haven't seen it, what he does, he walks on and, you know, like the, oh, Jeremy Corbyn. The entire crowd is singing, oh, Chabuddy G.
No, but he makes it sound cool. I start my own chant.
It's hilarious.
I start going, oh, Chabuddy G. I'm like, come on. It's so stupid.
But it's
like,
brilliant.
No, but it's funny, like, because that's the whole point. Like, Chabuddy would want everyone to chant his name.
I can't remember really anything. Like, I mean, you know, Monty Python or when, you know, Newman and Dill first did it. Yeah. It must have been a really surreal experience.
Yeah, I think like, Spinal Tap as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's that, I've always said this about Corrupt, like, I think what it is the boys do so well is that they're technically very gifted musicians and, you know, MCs, really fucking good. Like, I grew up rapping with them, like, we were, that was our thing, right? Like, we were just nerds for that shit, like the lyricism and, you know, like, Beats is a Novella award winning.
A lot of people don't know that.
Got number one.
She worked with
Emily
Sande.
Yeah, he's a musical G. Like, you know, he's very gifted. And I think we all have that musical thing. So they're technically really good. But what's funny, and I think this is the same that goes with Spinal Tap and all those kind of spoof bands, is that the content is funny.
Yeah.
So you can, like, you know, bang, lyrical blow to the jaw. Like, that's, you know, stupid. You know what I mean? Like, what does lyrical blow to the jaw mean? It means nothing. But it's catchy as fuck. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the key for the live shows. And it's also about, like, watching a show and then going to see them in the flesh and we're dressed in character, everything's done in character, things go wrong.
Mm.
It's like, you know, it's got a bit of a chaos.
But as much as that is true, I think that what Chabuddy G has become is like a social meme. Like, it's like, I don't think, since, you know, Partridge, really, there's been a character that's been so, you know, sort of ubiquitous with this sort of time and a generation. What's that like? Being that character.
You know what?
How does that...
I think it's weird because, I think some people say, oh, you're either a social meme or you're a character actor or you're this and that. Like, I don't think it's like it can be labeled like that because, like, in the times that we live in, we have so many different avenues to get our stuff out there. Like, you know, we have TV, we have radio, we have music, we have YouTube, so much shit, right? Instagram. So it's like, why not, you know, have... And the thing is, the Chabuddy G with the social media version is, like, a little bit different to the version on the television show, right?
Yeah.
But it's still in the same tone and it's still got that same character, the voice, the character's voice. But I think there's no reason why you can't do both. And I think we've kind of utilised that. And because the thing is, like, you can be a social meme, right? But, I mean, social memes, their lifespan, it's like, you know, you can pop and you can make money, right? But for a year from now, like,
is it relevant?
Are you going to be the same?
Yeah.
Memes are like, they're kind of temporary in a way. Some do really well. But it's like, the show is there to have the long-lasting effect and make it a real three-dimensional character that you know about what he wears, what he looks like, what he's, you know, how he sounds. People read their tweets, read my tweets and my and the Chobuddy's voice.
Always.
You know, I think it's cool, and I think it's surprising to see. It always surprises me.
How long does it take you from, you know, when you really start writing, like to really build a character?
It's interesting because I think characters start from years back. Like, I think, you know, if I have an idea for a character, I won't just start writing. I'll start, just have that and like maybe be around it, because my thing is always based on people in my life, right? So it's like, you know, you live that life and you pick up their mannerisms, and I think it takes a while. And I think, you know, when a character isn't fully fledged and when you're watching something, you're kind of like, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't believe that you're a real person. And I think with Chobuddy, like, that's, I've been growing up with a Chobuddy my whole life. So you totally, like, even you lot just hearing me chat right now, I know a lot of you lot are disappointed I'm not talking like that. You know what I mean? And there is that element of, oh, what? He's not even, you know what I mean? There is that
he's
element.
He's not actually Chobuddy G,
Yeah, but that's amazing, because it's like, you believe the character so much that you want it to be real and you believe it to be real. So I think it takes time, and it has to be really, really like fleshed out. You have to live that character. You have to experience everything about that character to really make it believable, you know?
So let's talk about, another sort of one of your shows that, you know, a lot of us did see. Maybe some of the people did, probably not as aware of it as people just did.
No one's fucking seen
it. Off the record, right? And to explain this process, if you haven't seen, because this is crazy.
Yeah, it's a mental, mental show that I did like 2 years ago, and we did two series for Dave. So they don't just do repeats, they do actual shows as well. And it was a mockumentary starring David Hasselhoff, right? It was called Hoff the Record, yeah? Good pun. And it's just about him like being a complete loser, kind of like Curb Enthusiasm kind of esque. And it's about him just like being basically blacklisted from LA in America and coming to London to relaunch his career. And then I play his cab driver, Terry Patel, you know what I mean? And like, he's this fucking nightmare of a character. And like, the first scene is Hoff's there at the airport and they see this Merc. And then, you know, he's like, gets into the Merc. And he's like, no, this is for Liam Neeson. And then the Merc pulls away and it's me there with a seven-seater being like, Hoff! And like, the first question I ask him as he gets in the car is like, Hoff, mate, big fan. Did you fuck Pamela Anderson? That's how the series starts. And it's just about him like relaunching his career. Everything goes wrong. And it was an amazing show. But like, you know, unfortunately, not many people saw it. I think because it was on Dave, the marketing was not as, you know, up to like what I think they wanted it to be.
It's weird though, isn't it? I mean, we live, you know, I just got back from the States and it's like we live in a time of content. You know, I go for meetings, people like talk about loads of great Netflix shows. I've literally never heard of them.
Yeah.
You know, like there's never
so
been
much out there.
More, yeah. Sort of, you know. But what was it like working with him?
I mean, he's amazing, but like not in a good way. No. He's basically, the parallels between him and Trump are amazing. Like,
really?
He's very much Trump-esque. The difference is I respect Hoff way more because Hoff's self-made. So, like, true, you know what I mean? Hoff is self-made, and but he has been famous for so long. And we're talking a different level of fame.
Yeah.
Like, Hoff is, your mum knows him, your little brother knows him, your gran knows him. Like, of all walks of life, everyone will know David Hasselhoff, whether it's Knight Rider, you know, Baywatch, or, you know, Britain's Got Talent, or that video where he's pissed eating burgers. And we spoofed that on the show as well. But yeah, he's insane. But you know, he's so famous. Like, he's really fucking tall. That's the first thing you notice about him. You know, he's really orange. Those are the first two things. You're like, you're really tall and orange. But I remember we were filming in fucking Wimbledon, I think, outside a kebab shop at like 8 a.m. And he's such a, like, it's David Hasselhoff, right? What the fuck is he doing outside a kebab shop in Wimbledon? He caused 3 accidents that day because it was like a guy on a bike just going past me like, is that fucking David? And like, ah! And like 3 accidents. So yeah, his level of fame is ridiculous.
That's
like,
insane.
But it's strange because he is a really nice guy. And this was the first thing, because we won an Emmy for this show, right? So it was the first thing that was credible. He had critical acclaim. The first time in his life, like, because like Baywatch and all that, they're classic legendary shows, but they're shit. Right? No, they're not like, you know, it's not amazing acting. The script was, you know, it's
when
iconic.
When CJ ran out, that was...
It's iconic, but not in the best. So he was really proud of this show.
I bet he was.
And we didn't get commissioned for a third series, and it broke his heart. And he really? Still messages us now. We've got a group chat and he's like, we're going to do season three, guys. And it's like 3 years later and we're like, I don't know, bruv. I don't think it's happening, mate. But no, he's amazing, but he's a very interesting and very Trump-esque character. Yeah. Just completely. I think if you were famous for that long at that age, because he was famous, what, 18, 19?
Yeah.
I think you can't be, you know, self-aware. You live in your own world.
He was a pop star. He was, you know,
he believes he brought down the Berlin Wall.
And he literally does. Right. I've seen
he
that.
He told me he was like, I brought down the Berlin Wall. He's like, because of my song, you know, that fight for freedom. Really believes that. Like, and I'm like, and I'm like, oh, he's serious. Like, you know, and it's...
Here we've only got Russell Brand thinking he was the reason that Ed Miliband lost.
Yeah,
I mean? That's
exactly.
The only parallel.
It's not the
got.
Same level, but
no,
yeah.
No,
he's amazing, and he's a proper lad.
Yeah,
like
I
me
bet.
And him got on. Me and him got on really well.
What's yeah. the what's the sort of because sometimes
even though I've trashed him here.
Yeah. Everybody's going to get back to him.
Yeah, love you, Uncle Hoff. Jokes.
What's the kind of you know, you've done you know everything you've done now. Like, what's the work that you can talk about that. The stuff you're developing at the minute, you know, because obviously Chapani's a huge character, you know, and you're developing some new stuff at the minute that you're really excited about, I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's that kind of, and I don't want to be coy, it's just that things don't, I'll probably get in trouble, but
I'm
developing like new characters, but I'm really taking my time with it because I know that, like, you know, when I do a new character, it's going to be like, come on, mate. Like, you know what I mean? Get the peanut dust out. Don't try it. You know
don't
what I mean?
Try it, mate.
You're not anyone but your buddy. Fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know what? I've said this before. Like, I'd be happy if for the rest of my life, I only had this character. And this was, you know, like the same way Coogan gets people shouting, aha, at him. And he's an Oscar nominated, you know, quadruple BAFTA winning, like, legend, right? But I'm sure people still shout, aha, at him. And, you know, Ricky Gervais, and people would probably still do the dance to him, you know? Like, these are, like, characters that you should be grateful. You only get a few of them, or maybe minimum, you know, one in your life. But I think maybe Sasha is
one of the few guys
who's probably got two or three that are iconic.
And fuck knows what he's going to actually do, because he's been working on it.
It's incredible, but I mean, I don't even know how many comedy actors have got more than one really successful, character. Like, so I think if people shout peanut dust to me for the rest of my life, I won't be mad at that. Like, I'll be grateful because you have to be. And you know what? One day, no one's gonna give a shit. You know, like one day, I'm gonna be going up to people and be going, peanut dust. Do you want a picture?
Free ice cream?
Yeah, you want a free ice cream? Yeah.
So, in this In Conversation series, my fantastic guests, we're gonna draw on the amazing work of In the Actors Studio. And James Lipton, and
that
Marcel Proust's Old Questions. So we're gonna, you know, have a bit of fun with this. See how we go. So, what's your favourite word?
Chili seed. Sorry, go on.
What's your favourite word?
Girth.
What's your least favourite word?
Moist.
Why?
Because it sounds like what it is. Like my mouth feels like I feel like I can taste salt when I say moist. Moist. You know what I mean? It's just. In a way, it's my favourite word as well. But like, yeah, it sounds like what it is. Like cunt as well.
It's true, it's true. What is your favourite drug?
Chicken wings.
Really?
Yeah, I love chicken wings. I don't do drugs. I used to smoke a lot of fucking weed back in the day.
What was the kind of weed you liked smoking?
I'm from Hounslow, so we got some of the best skunk in the world.
Yeah.
We're like, no, for real.
It wasn't
no,
like
for real,
drugs.
I'm not even joking. Yeah. Like, ask your drug dealer where he gets his skunk from, and he will say Hounslow. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because we're right next to Heathrow, and a lot of shit gets smuggled in.
That's true.
And Hounslow is legendary for its skunk and its grow houses. I'm telling you for real. And I used to smoke skunk like every day, like an eighth every single day.
Because we used to get that shit, you know, that fucked up hash where it was like the plastic was actually stuck in it.
Yeah.
Like that was the only shit you could get in Camden. It was just
rubbish. Yeah, in Hounslow.
So you actually were getting the really good.
We got the real shit. And there was like a legendary drug dealer called, I never met him. He was almost like a myth. His name was Goldtooth Gudge.
What was his name?
Goldtooth Gudge. He was just like this really short, like Asian guy. I never met him, but like, I've heard about him.
What
like,
were the tales
legendary.
Of him? What was his
well, the
tale?
Tales were that he made a million and quit the game. Seriously. They were like, all the shotters were like, yeah, man, I want to. He was like the Scarface of Hounslow. And he was like, bruv, I want to be like Goldtooth one day, bruv. And they were like, he lives in the Bahamas now. And I'm also like, a million, like, you know, like,
yeah,
it's not that much. Like, people, like these days, like, you know, that's like, you know, a lot of properties are worth way more than that. And like, and I'm saying, oh, he made a million and quit the game and moved to the Bahamas. Like, and off skunk only, not even, like, he just sold weed and quit the, like,
that's
he wasn't
great,
smelling coke or crack, he wasn't smelling it, selling any of that. So yeah, he was like, and he was apparently like this really short Asian guy, but like, kind of Danny DeVito-esque, right. Like, you wouldn't fuck with him. And he was like proper, like, Aggie, and he had like this haircut, which was like, you know, the rakes, you know, the, like, he had a little single tash and just a, like, gold teeth everywhere. Like, gone don't gudge. And it was like, I don't know if he was real, to be honest. Like, it was one of those things.
Sounds pretty good.
But yeah, so I used to smoke skunk all the time, but then I don't know what happened. I don't know if the drugs became more powerful or I became more of a pussy. Probably a combination of both, but yeah. I just can't smoke it anymore.
No.
I just can't smoke it. It fucks me up. It gives me like anxiety and shit. And like, I start concentrating on my breathing. I'm like, if I stop breathing, I'm gonna die. I always start getting in my head like, inhale, one, two, three. You know, like, and I just have to like focus on not dying. And I thought, fuck it, I don't need this shit. And surprisingly, like, I used to smoke weed up until I was like 25, 26. And nothing happened for me in my life. Like, nothing happened. Yeah. And I was like, people just nothing only really started when we were like in our mid to late 20s. So I'm not saying there's a correlation, but I'm just saying, like, you don't need. I used to feel like I had to have a zoo to be creative. Yeah. And then I just thought, you don't really. For some people, it works, but I just thought every time I was going to smoke, I was going to die.
What I love is the shit where it's like, you think you're really caned and you've come up with a fucking great idea.
Yeah. You look back the next morning. Yeah. I know. Yeah, it does that to you.
So, what's your favorite curse word?
I already said cunt, didn't I?
No, you can't use that one.
You can't use that one. I'd probably say, okay, I'll tell you a funny story. Let's just see how many Asian people are in here. Right, you'll love this. so my favorite word is benjod, yeah? Which in Punjabi, it means sister fucker, right? And it, but it's like, no, but it's like motherfucker, right? It's like, and he gets used, like my dad uses it in every sentence. Like when he's talking to his friend, he's like, benjod. And it just, it becomes like a, you know, a verb, an adjective, everything, right? It's got many uses. But when I was younger, right, because my dad used to say it so much, so when I was like really young, I didn't know what he was saying, right? But I used to know my dad would always say, benjod, 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 right? And then in my language, right, bent. So I thought he was saying bent jor. And bent means trousers, yeah? And jor means thief, right? So, and I was like, why is my dad always obsessed with these trouser thieves? You know what I mean? But he was saying bent jor. But because in Punjabi, you'll know, in Punjabi, they speak so rapidly. So it was like, benjod, benjod. So I grew up thinking that was benjod. And only until I was like 16, and because I'm a bit of a coconut, only until I was 16, I was like, you know, with some Asian mates, and I thought, oh, let me brown it up a little bit. And I was like, oh man, innit, man? I'll tell you what, man, he's a bloody benjod. And my mate was just like, what did you say? And I went, benjod. And he went, benjod. And I went, yeah. And then that's when I obviously, it was a rude
that's awakening. That's amazing.
So yeah, that's my favourite word.
That's amazing. Yeah. Trouser thief. That's not what I expected you to say. What turns you on creatively, spiritually or emotionally?
Turns me on? Well, like literally, like boner.
You know, whichever you like, you know, in this joking, sort of actory sort of way.
You know what I really fucking love, and I have this with my corrupt boys. I love corpsing. I love trying to make your mates laugh when you're on set. Because, like, I'll be honest with you, like, there's a lot of self-indulgence in comedy, but we have self-indulgence within our group. So, like, not only are, like, we're obviously really good mates. We spend so much time with each other. Like, our inner circle, like, and I'm talking about, you know, like, me, Grindr, Beat, Steve's, Decoy, Fantasy. Like, we go on tour together. We spend so much. We're like brothers. We fight and everything. It's like a normal relationship. But we try and make each other laugh. And we're brutal. Like, you have to be on point if you're with the boys. So, like, you have... And then when we're on set, like, I'm not trying to make anyone else laugh. Not the director. Fuck the director. Fuck the producer. Fuck everyone else in the scene. I'm trying to make Steve's laugh, who's sitting in the corner there. You know, and I'm just looking. If he's laughing, if I get him...
Yeah.
Or if I get Grind, if I get Beats, I've done my job.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? Because you can feel that energy... And it's building, and you're like, I can.
Yeah.
But those are the best bits as well. Because when you don't, and then you look back at the foot, and then you look some of it, and you're like, fuck, what the fuck did I?
A show without corpsing, I think you have to start worrying. Like, if you're filming and no one's laughing,
exactly.
No one's fucking up, No one, like, it's ruining the scene because they can't stop laughing. Fucking,
but you know, there's that classic, you know, YouTube clip show, which a million times of like Eastbound and Down.
Oh man,
Will Ferrell's like, plums. Feeling
it
in my plums.
And it's let the boy watch.
Let the boy watch.
One of the best things I've ever seen.
If you haven't seen it, you should definitely watch that.
And you know what? We've got so much of that shit, but we never released it. And I'll tell you why, because we were so like, and in a way, I kind of regret this, but I understand it. We never wanted people to see a great character. Even that's why we've done so much shit. That's why doing this shit. I haven't done this kind of Q&A shit before because I like staying in character like we all do. Because then you believe it so much more when you're on TV. You're like, that's the guy. Like, that's the guy, you know? So, but we've got so much stuff. And maybe we'll release it one day, but we've got so much fun.
That's the weird thing though, isn't it? Like a lot of the time, and sometimes when you go and do stuff on like, you know, other people's stuff, and no one is laughing, and no one's saying anything.
Oh, man,
And you can really feel, it's like, and you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Like, it's fucking comedy. Like, if it's not making you laugh, there's a problem. And oh, I didn't want to.
I worked with some directors who used to tell, us off for corpsing and being like, come on, guys, get it right. And you're like, you're not shut the fuck. Like, yeah, what the fuck? That's the comedy is like, if you're doing drama, like, it's intense. Like, comedy, you need to laugh.
I think it's the death of comedy when you don't have someone who's prepared to just tell the truth. Like, I think why, you know, with the guy I work with, Hayden, it's like, you know, we've known each other for so long, it's like you can say it's shit and it's not like you're being a cunt. You're just going, I want it to be better, right? I mean, you have that
it's
with the boys,
right?
It's toxic
to be around yes men and yes women. It's very toxic. Like, you can't just have, if everyone's like, you killed it, smashed it, like, let's move on. It's like, no, you have that with directors.
Yeah.
Like, some people be like, okay, perfect. And you're like, no. I've had to stop directors sometimes and be like, no, let's not fucking move on. Let's do it again, because no fucker laughed. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you don't have that honesty, like, you're dead, man. You need that.
So, real question. Who from real life would you like to see on a new banknote?
Oh, come on, that's easy. That's my man D-Bro, David Attenborough.
Yeah, boy. I think everyone agree with that one, right?
You know what? I met him once,
And what?
No, not like on some bougie industry shit. I met him when I was working doing those tape registration things. He came to Chiswick Park, where I worked, and he lives from Richmond. And he comes into that, have you ever been there, Chiswick Business Park? It's really beautiful. It's all man-made, but it's got like pond and ducks. It's a really beautiful place to work, And he was there and he came and did a little talk. And you know, I was at front row and shit, and I was just like fucking measuring my eyes. Like, this is the God right here. Like, I think he's one of the most important figures to ever live.
Totally.
Like, I think what he's contributed to, like, our everything, like our wealth of knowledge about wildlife and the earth and everything, like, it's insane. I was at the front row and, you know, I had a question. It was something about fossils or shit. I can't remember the question. But before I asked the question, I went to him and I was like building myself up. The whole courage the whole time, my mate was like, don't fucking do it, don't. And I went, hi, Alan. And I went, do you mind if I call you D, bro? Like David Attenborough, it's like hip hop. And then he went, I quite like that. And I was like, adopt me. Like, nah, but he is, without a fucking doubt. And I think, God forbid, when he, you know, when he passes, if he passes, because he might be immortal.
I mean, it could be, I mean.
He might be some next celestial being.
Pretty.
But I think when he passes, we should have a national holiday.
I couldn't agree more.
He's the God, man.
The mad shit is when you read about stuff like his wife was like the number one person to look after like chimpanzees. And then like when London Zoo had like a sort of orangutan that had just been like, don't live with him. And he was like, I saw the interview with him. He was like, the orangutan swing around the house, shitting everywhere. Like, just like, what an absolute dog.
Mental. And also, not just for the wildlife stuff, but he was like a commissioner at the BBC and he made commission like Monty Python and all this kind of shit. Like, he's done mad shit in his life that people don't even know.
Totally.
And he's, I think, the only living person to have filmed in every single format in like black and white, like 3D, 4K, IMAX. Like, he's done it all. That's how fucking old he is. From the beginning of time. Like, no, he's, definitely D-Bro all the way.
What turns you off?
Excuses. People who say, I don't know, I read this somewhere recently. It was just like people who were like, oh man, I can't catch a fucking break, man. And like people who want to blame others for their kind of misfortunes and their bad luck. Like, I think it was Joe Rogan, actually. I saw a video of Joe Rogan in his podcast and he was like, get that shit away from me. Like, get that negative, weak mentality. And it's quite, it sounds like mean to say that. But that energy, like, I've been around a lot of people who are like that. A lot of people I grew up with, a lot of people who are like, get weird with your success. And, yeah. You know, what about me, man? You know, bring me in, man. Like, what about, you know, like, I fucking work hard. Why can't I catch those breaks? And it's like, they just think that, totally. Like, we haven't had any shit breaks. Yeah. Like, I've had shit luck my whole, and not even luck, I mean, it's just had, I've failed so much in my life that, like, you know, you can't, and I've never blamed anyone else for it. I've always been like, there's no excuses in this shit, man, no matter what field you're in. Like, blame yourself, like, you know, take accountability and fucking get better and practice and, you know, keep on doing it until you get better, because no one just succeeds.
Yeah.
Shit doesn't happen, it's not real life.
We talked about this before, but, you know, we're both kids that got bullied in school. You know, it's like some shit, I sometimes think, if it doesn't happen to you early in life and you kind of have to, you know, hit adversity and just be like, fuck it, I've got to try again. But I suspect, particularly doing anything in the media, like, everyone wants a piece of that. Yeah. And the idea that anyone else can help, because people go, well, how can I do it? It's like, I don't know. You're you.
Exactly. It's different. People say that to me all the time. And I think, like, nepotism is a real thing in the industry as well. People just bringing people through.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, my cousin, he knows, he's used the camera once. And it's like, no, that DOP, that camera guy, he's been working for 10 years, practicing his craft. And there's a reason why he's getting... He's there why he is.
You know, it's just, thing with nepotism and stuff, it gets you so far, but then good people are like, his shit. Exactly. I don't want to work with him.
Yeah, yeah. You can blag it only to a certain point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh man, I'll tell you what, yeah. Men, you might hear me out on this one, you might agree with me. I would trade all my talents, if I have any, anything I think I have, everything, to be able to sing. I swear to God. Like, no, but when I say sing, I mean like sing.
Like kill it.
Marvin Gaye, like Luther Vandross, like Sade. Well, not that, but a bit weird. But like, be able to sing, like, you know, like fucking melt someone, destroy someone with your voice.
Yeah.
Like, think how powerful that is. It's more powerful than anything.
Yeah.
Even comedy. Like, comedy, totally. I can tell you a joke and make you laugh, but you're not going to melt, and I'm not going to speak to your soul like that Killing Me Softly tune.
Yeah.
That's what it is, man. Yeah. You're looking in someone's eye, and they're fucking singing your life, and you're like, putty. Like, you melt. You can melt. Like, I'm a huge music fan, and I'm like, some people's voices, there's only a few, I think.
Who are they? Who are the people's voices that you...
Nina Simone, like? I think, is one of the greatest voices of all time. I think Otis Redding, his voice was impeccable. Lauryn Hill, I was listening to the new Drake song, sick tune. And my little bro, yeah, he's 15, yeah? He just wants to be a little rude boy. He just got suspended from his school, yeah?
What?
Well, yeah, I know, he's a little shit. But pressing the fire alarm, yeah? And he was like listening to Drake. I was at my dad's house. He was playing Fortnite. He's fucking mad. I've got two other little brothers. They're playing Fortnite all night long. I'm just watching them. Like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And he's playing this Drake song, you know, and he's like, laugh at me, laugh at me. You said you laugh at me. And then he was like, he calls me Asimbai. Yeah, like Asimbai. He's like, Asimbai. He's like, you know, Drake sampled like some old soul singer on this. And I was like, old soul. I was like, bro, that's Lauryn Hill, man. I was like, that's the miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That's one of the best albums ever made. And I felt like such an old man. You know what I mean? Like, in my day. And I'm like, it's not even that old.
I know, I hate that.
You know, but yeah, Lauryn Hill, without a doubt.
Shut up! Sorry.
Yeah. The Drake fan.
Is that the sort of like, if you had that voice, would that be what you wanted to do? Like, would it be a soul?
Oh, I don't know if I wanted to be, I don't know if I'd ever pursue it. Like, I might be on some, like, you know, Barry White kind of fat man swag. Well, you know, but I don't know if I'd ever want to pursue it, but I think just to have that, because it's God given.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't care how much you train and then that, like you look at Michael Jackson singing when he's a little kid, you're like, come on, like, come that's on, it. That's God given. You know what I mean?
100%.
And 100% be able to just to melt someone with my voice.
What profession would you not like to do?
Oh, I think, like, I know it's probably a bit cliche, but actually, no, not even, because I've had a lot of office jobs that I love, because I think it depends, right? Like, I don't always think that your work needs to be something that, like, fulfills you always. Like, I think you can have a career in something that you don't even enjoy doing, like, in terms of your passion, right? But in a way, you have your passion outside of your work. It's like when you study something, right? I think sometimes it takes the love and the joy out of it. Like, imagine if you just worked a normal job. Like, I can't remember what philosopher, some philosopher said this, but he was like the happiest man I ever knew, ever met. And this, like, you know, he was like, was a farmer who basically lived in a house with his mates. They all married, all lived together. And every day he would just go and farm his land for like 6-7 hours, yeah, and then just get drunk with his boys, his wives and that. And he said he was the happiest man I've ever met in my life. He had nothing, no depression, nothing. Like, it was just perfect. And so, yeah, I think you can do loads of, you know, jobs and that you don't particularly like, but then it almost sometimes, if you're not doing that, because the thing is, right, when I was working an office job, like...
What were you doing in an office job?
That tape registration shit. Right, but yeah, I've done other stuff like call centers and all that, but you spend so much time there, right? Can you
imagine asking on the call center?
Oh, mate, I've got a story. Me, all the corrupt boys, we used to work in the same call center.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah, in Kingston.
No way.
Swear to God.
At the same time?
In Kingston, yeah, at the same time. We all got each other jobs, yeah? Huh? CTC. It was Kingston. It was called CTC. We were selling magazine subscriptions to old people, like Salmon and Trout and like Top Gear and all that. And it was like, you know, you had your script like, hi there, my name's Asim and I'm just calling all that shit. But what we did is that we started doing accents and we started, like, Grindr, for example. This goes back. Sipa used to... He used to like really be extreme, so he used to try and make everything rhyme, but without the person knowing it. So he'd be like, "Hi there, I hope you're having a nice day. I just called to say, hey," and like, you know, you could buy now. You don't have to pay, and like, and they just wouldn't, and the whole chat would rhyme, and they have no idea. And then I'd sometimes like pretend to be like, you know, like RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan, you know, because they don't listen. They never listen to what your name is. If you cold call someone, they'll be like, "Hi there, my name is." You can say anything. So I used to be like, "Hi there, my name's RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan." And, but basically what happened is that we got caught because they were all recorded.
Oh, God.
And we just, one by one, we all got fired, basically. That's where I met Decoy, Dan. Yeah,
really?
That's where Grindr met. We all met Decoy. He worked there because he's from Kingston. So that's where we met him there.
Fucking mad.
But yeah, worst job. Oh, let's just say call center then. Worst job, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it was a fucking laugh.
To what fault do you feel most indulgent?
Chicken wings.
Bad chicken wings.
I think, to what faults? I think maybe sometimes like taking shit too seriously.
Yeah.
I think like sometimes you get caught up in, you know, people, you know, I think you get caught up in this game of like, you know, people were nice to you and it becomes hard to, you know, distinguish what's real, what's fake.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I want to believe the fake shit, you know what I mean? Because it's nicer.
100%.
And, you know, people, you know, praising you and all that. That's great to hear, but you don't want to hear something that's, maybe you shouldn't have done that. Maybe you should have, you know, did this differently, did that. So, yeah, I think maybe sometimes I indulge in the fakeness of the industry stuff sometimes.
Do you find it hard to stop? Like, do you find it hard to sort of switch... Of because I think sometimes, sometimes some of my friends have, you know, quote unquote, like, or less bizarre careers. It's like they can genuinely go home. They're like, "Wicked, I'm watching telly." I'm just genuinely, like, it's quite hard sometimes to.
Yeah.
Do you find it hard to switch off?
It's really hard. I think I'm an insomniac, so I, weirdly enough, like all my best ideas come at night when I'm trying to fucking sleep, and it's like, I find myself just waking up, writing shit down. And but the thing is you wake up and you're like, "This is shit." Like you were saying before, when you're smoking and that, and you're like. But I think the best ideas will haunt you. I think the best ideas, I've got ideas that I came up with like 4 or 5 years ago.
What does that mean to you when you say they haunt you?
Well, the best ideas, they will never let you go until you make them. They're screaming like, "Fucking make me, you know, make me real."
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, they will haunt you. Like they will be there, you know, on your brain at all times. And they're the best ones. I think the ones where you get gassed. And you're like, "Oh, this is sick," and you do loads of work for it. You've got the treatment, you've got this, that. And then a month later, you kind of like forget about it. And you're like, "Yeah, that needs to go.
Yeah.
Just let that one go." But that one that's been, you know, like haunting you for 2-3 years, but you just haven't had the time or it hasn't fitted right, that's the one that will hit.
What is your motto? Or what do you sort of tell yourself to sort of like be like?
Money over bitches.
Money over bitches.
motto. I don't know if I really live by mottos, man. I think.
But do you know what I mean? Like, what do you sort of get? Yeah. How do you kind of like, you know? You don't have to think about that one straight away because come back to it.
I think my motto is like just always like try and better yourself and like learn, like practice your craft. That's what I'd say. Like never ever be like every single day. Like even if it's with your buddy or whatever it is, I'm always writing notes down. I'm always looking at things and, you know, like what did I. I thought of something the other day. I was eating a jelly baby, and I was like, "Oh, it'd be funny if Chobody G started selling these like, you know, like these defected, like, you know, jelly babies, but they're really tiny, and he called them jelly fetuses. And I was like, then I was like, no, that shit is weird. So no, it's like, but, you know, it's constantly coming up with that, and like, you know.
Have we got the mic? Because what we're going to do now is open it up to you guys, have a Q&A, you know, for as long as you still guys having a good time?
Yeah.
Good. Right. Okay, so, yes.
Hi, mate. Have you been on a BA flight recently?
Last year I did, yeah, and it was fucking weird, mate. It was fucking weird. Yeah, no, I did like the safety video. If any of you lot have been in a BA flight, I did it for Comic Relief. So it came off the back of the Ed Sheeran thing that we did, the sketch.
Ed Sheeran.
And and it was a thing for charity where they were like, no one pays attention to in-flight safety videos. You know, everyone's like, that's the boring shit. The cool people don't watch that shit. You know what I mean? So it's like, work with an advertising agency and we just like created something that, you know, would be funny that people watch, but also like learn quite vital bits of information because like, thing is, right, like we normalize flying. It's nothing normal about flying. Like, do you know what I mean? Like you're in, they're fucking thousands and thousands of miles up in a device or whatever you want to call it.
I love the idea. We are thousands of miles up.
But like filled with fuel.
Oh, God,
like,
no,
it's so fucking, it's frightening, bruv. Like, and I don't know, and if shit popped off, I'm not really asking, I mean, your answer to your question is yes, I have been on a flight recently.
You can see it's going really well. It's thousands of miles up, it's filled with fuel.
But yeah, it's fucking weird. And I was there actually like a few months ago and I was sitting there watching it and obviously there was a woman really nervous. Right, and like, and at the time, like, you know, like I normally rock the ISIS beard when I'm not, you know, Chibuddy, yeah? ISIS X ASOS, that's my look. But I had this big beard, right, and I was like sitting there, and she looked at me, and she clocked that I was the guy in the video, so she kind of did the whole... She did that, but then she looked at me, and... This isn't the guy that you want giving you fucking safety supplies. But yeah, I have. It's been.
Was it mad though? Was it mad working with those people? I mean, you know, fucking crazy. Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah,
like,
Rowan Atkinson's weird, man.
I bet.
He's like real life Mr. Bean. Like he walks around. Like I feel like I'm looking at you a lot because you're right in the center. No, don't apologize.
Sorry. Sorry.
I feel
sorry,
like I'm just
mate.
Having a conversation with you. Sorry, because you're dead center. It's not weird. But we should hang out though.
Great trainers.
Mr. Bean kind of walks around like, so he's got this thing where, oh, you know what? I'm just going to say it because he was a bit of, anyway. So like he's very, very specific about how he does his comedy, right? So he's a fucking genius, right? Like in my opinion, Bean, modern day Charlie Chaplin.
100%.
Like he is our Charlie Chaplin and he is without a doubt the most successful comedy character. Like
international, he's a physical comic, so you can do, you know.
I mean,
have to
nothing beats
language.
Him. Like, no. I think you can go to places where people won't know Ali G and Borat, David Brent. They won't know these characters, right? Find me a country where no one knows, people don't know Mr. Bean. Like my grandfather used to like Mr. Bean. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just timeless slapstick mime kind of shit.
Must
right?
have been amazing watching these people work though. As well. I mean, I know it's a safety, but it's incredible, like the way that it's.
The whole thing with the safety video was that I was the director off the back of the Comic Relief stuff, and I was auditioning these people, and then I was supposed to have my scene with Rowan Atkinson. And I was like, "Fucking hell, this is mad, like Mr. Bean, right?" And then you know he comes in and he comes over and he kind of twiddling his fingers and he whispers something to Emma Freud, Richard Curtis's wife, girlfriend, and he's like, S-s-s-s. And then she comes up to me and she goes, "Asim."
Oh God!
Rowan wants the room cleared, and he doesn't want you to be in the sketch. And I went, "Oh right," because like we've like written this sketch.
Isn't it?
We've been spending like 2 months writing the sketch for him, and they were just like, "No, he's not having it." And then he removed most people from the studio, and I was just watching him like through a door. And he spent an hour just walking around, twiddling his fingers, and just talking to himself.
Yeah.
Going, and then he'll do a take, and then he'll go behind the monitor, check the monitor, yeah. If he doesn't like it, and they have to like delete the footage.
Yeah, I heard that too.
They have to delete the footage. Like, and then he'll go back and twiddle his thumbs and then do it again, and then he'll do it. And
it's weird,
Richard Curtis is that he used to be an engineer or not a mechanic, that's weird. He was an engineer. He had his background as an engineer. So he treats his comedy like his engineer. So everything is like bom, bom, bom. And you know that when you look at his work, it's flawless. Like, you know what I mean? It's like timeless comedy.
But John Lloyd said exactly the same. You know when he used to do the Barclaycard adverts?
Yeah.
Every single bit. Like, do you remember that bit where it was like boff and he turned around and he hit him the back of the head and apparently he had to do it 15 times.
Man, with the perfectionist is not even a... It's an understatement.
Right, who's who had a hand up next? I really would like to go guy, girl, if possible. Another question.
Hi, somebody.
This lady up here over there. Can we have the mic just go back and then we'll come to you, mate. That's all right. Everyone's still okay? I know it's a small room. Like another 5 minutes, really. Then we're going to close up. So a couple more questions. Oh.
Hiya. So you said like the Ed Sheeran thing and everything like that. Every time I hear Shape of You, I always hear I'm in love with your buddy afterwards. Is there not a point where you think, oh, fuck, what have I done?
I think I made the song better. A pretty shit song. Come on.
Okay.
It's a pretty shit song. And it's also, it's also a rip-off of No Scrubs.
Yeah. But is there
do people know that? Yeah, and you have to pay them. So it's like that, how's it go?
Do you know, it's the Scrubs bit, but Jamal Edwards always says that. He's always like, just take the piss.
Yeah, oh no, it's just, and I don't think he did
it. Are you a big Ed Sheeran fan?
No, not at all. But
no, he's the nicest guy.
Yeah, there's a,
manager's here, Neil. And yeah, Neil knows him very well, and he is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Him and Craig David, oh my God. Like, swear down.
We actually have to talk about Craig David.
One of the nicest men. We used to, like, back in the day, we used to, like, you know, laugh a little bit.
People just do nothing. No Craig David revival. Am I wrong?
Oh, whoa.
I mean, are you joking?
They did on the Mr. Jam. Yeah, the one extra. But Craig David is one of the nicest guys you ever meet. I'll tell you a story about Craig David. He's so... Like, when you see him on Instagram and all that, like, he's really, like, positive and, like, you know, like, he's into his fitness and he's really positive. Like, come on, guys, we can do this. And I was at Fabric. True story. My manager can back me up on this one, yeah? I was at Fabric and we did our headline show at Fabric. And, you know, we were going to bring Craig David out as a surprise. And this was when he was shit hot, like, just came back. Like, you know, did the Justin Bieber remix thing everywhere. Yeah. Killing it, right? And we thought, perfect, Fabric. It was a mad night. Like, someone had a heart attack in the club. My best mate lost his wedding ring finger. Wedding ring? Wedding ring. Yeah, so he didn't lose a finger. He lost his wedding ring. He lost his wedding ring. And so we were backstage and we were about to go on and I'm like really anxious, yeah, because like I do the intro. So like I'm the first one who walks out and I introduce Beats and Grinder and I need to hype it. You know what I mean? I'm like, who's ready? All this stuff. Craig David's there and he's in the green room. Yeah, and I'm really anxious. So basically, I go to him. I'm like, yeah, you're right. He's like, yeah, man, I'm feeling great, man. And I'm like, what time is it, by the way? And then he showed me his watch and he went to me, the time is now. And I went, what? And then on his watch, it just had now. Like, with no dials on it. And I swear to God, like, that's the name of his new album, The Time Is Now. And go to his Google, go to his Instagram and just scroll down, you'll see his watch, innit? You'll see his watch and it just says now, yeah? And then I was like, you know, I was obviously really anxious and he was like, the time is now. And I went, cool. And I went, do you know what time it is actually, though? And then he just got out his phone and he went, yeah, it's 2:43. You know, so it was like, nicest man in the world. But yeah, the Ed Sheeran thing, like, okay, so the story behind that track is good because Stanza, my manager, Ed Sheeran, we did the Comic Relief thing and people were messaging Ed Sheeran being like, I'm hearing Chabuddy, you know, I'm in love with Chabuddy, like, you know. So Ed Sheeran asked Stanza, he was like, bruv, just can you ask Asim just to do a remix? So Stanza calls me up, he's like, listen, Ed wants you to do a remix of the song. And like, you know, and then that was it. And I did it the next day, I put it out. And then when we were filming on another day, he came up and just sang the Chabuddy bit. But yeah, one of the nicest guys, but shit song.
So. You, sir, and did you want to ask one? That was the smallest little...
So if you were to go from the mayor of Hounslow to the mayor of London, what would your big change be?
What would be the policy, Chabuddy's policy for the mayor
Space
of London?
Space Raiders, make them 10p again.
Okay, and on that note, I would like everyone to thank Asim Chowdhury.
And that draws to an end the series of news roasts.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening. If you really enjoyed, please subscribe, rate and share the podcast. We literally survive making the podcast on being able to fund the recording through advertising, and that helps when it's higher in the chart. So please check it out, share it with your friends and your family. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye.